Ladies and gentlemen, listeners of the podcast, South Shore Ave Radio presents The Stoop, a mini podcast series. It's a summer series of podcasts that will be shorter in length. It'll be around 15 to 20 minute segments on average. The name of this podcast follows in the same vein as great conversations that you would have had with your friends and loved ones on a hot summer day on The Stoop. It's usually unexpected, but you'll end up having some great, insightful, and some funny conversations on those steps. It's a very underrated foundation for great conversation. So before we begin, I'd like to make a slight confession. Now, during the launch of the first episode of the AF podcast, at the time that I did it, I didn't think anything of it, but as time went along, I felt a little bad that I didn't properly introduce my first guest. Now that he's going to be the first guest of this summer series, I'd like a second chance at a first start. Now, I know the saying goes that you can't get a second chance at a first impression, but F it. We're going to break the laws of society here. So I'm going to reintroduce to you the first guest of South Shore Ave Radio here on The Stoop. I wrote an intro about it. Want to hear it? Here it goes. Ladies and gentlemen, and listeners of South Shore Ave Radio, I would like to give you a proper reintroduction to the 1985 Centennial Regional High School Basketball Player of the Year, as well as the Quebec High School Player of the Year, one of the few basketball players in the 80s from this native land to parlay his basketball talents into a U.S. basketball scholarship. A proud Marist College alumnus, he can name Rick Smits and Rudy Gobert Sr. as some of his teammates during his time spent at that fine institution. Among other things, his Red Fox squad is prominently featured in the game that Akeem went to see on his double date with the McDowell sisters in Coming to America. It's also a rumor that Akeem flew up and screamed for joy after one of this man's dunks, and not because he was getting a testicular rubdown in his seat. The CEO and the leader of Franchise Athletics, the only dunker on the back of that Air Canada plane, ladies and gentlemen, listeners of the pod, put your hands together for the one, for the only, brother from the same mother and father, Big Brother Curtis, ladies and gentlemen. Big Brother Curtis. Ladies and gentlemen, Big Brother Curtis.
Yeah, yeah. Finally. Good Lord. That was long.
That was good, though, right?
But not good, though. It was well deserved. I waited a long time for that. Shit.
Yeah, I felt a little bad about the first time, you know?
So I haven't gotten props since 1990.
Deservedly so. This is The Stoop on South Shore Ave Radio. Oh, by the way, since we're on The Stoop right now, you want something to drink? You good? You want something to drink?
Yeah, I'm good.
You sure? You sure you want something to drink?
Yeah, I'm good.
No, let me get you some drink. Mama! Mama! The drinks, Mama! The drinks! Kobe Bryant, Allen Iverson, Steve Nash, Ray Allen, Kevin Garnett, Rasheed Wallace, Dirk Nowitzki, Paul Pierce, Vince Carter, Tracy McGrady, Michael Olowokandi. Is Tim Duncan better than all of them? What?
Are you joking with the last name?
Yeah, I guess.
Okay. Like, what the hell? The candy man, please, really?
Sure, he didn't comb his hair during games, but, you know, nobody does that.
Let's not waste any more time on it.
Is Tim Duncan better than all of them, though?
It better than all of them? From a historical standpoint, yes. I would say yes from a historical standpoint. For what he did in his time spent on the hardwood. If I had to choose one career to put on my mantle, I'll take his. Because he's done it all. He's won everything. He's represented well. Represented not only his team, the NBA, his country, West Indians in general. The dude is just put out every time, right? So I gotta give him his props. I'll take him before any of those guys.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with you in that sense that I think he is the greatest winner of his generation by far. His team's won 50-plus games, 18 out of the 19 seasons, including the 2012 lockout, shortened season. Even in 1999, when they only played 50 games, they still won 74% of their games. To me, I think that's incredible. I don't think you'll... Not to say you'll never see that again, but how rare is that to even see something like that? You probably have to go back to, the 60s Celtics in terms of his winning percentage and, you know, all the stuff that he's accomplished, especially during the regular season.
You know? Yeah, and I'll give credit to his organization, the Pops.
Oh, yeah.
Pops IQ, Pops standards of playing, how they draft players and put players together. But at the end of the day, he was that head of the snake. If it wasn't for him, I don't think any of those other cats on that team would have gotten off as they did.
Yeah, he's like Voltron. Basically, he's the head, you know, and everybody else, you know, is the arms and the legs and everything else. Mm-hmm. It's a perfect storm of right coach, right organization, right temperament, even the right city. You know, I think it's a combination of all of those things. I think with Tim Duncan, I think that basically with him on your team for the last 20 years, you're guaranteed to be a contender. You know, and the scary thing is right from the beginning. When he came in 1997-98, and I mean, they still had some beasts. You still had like Karl Malone that was still winning MVPs during that time. And this guy came in rookie year and was first team All-NBA.
Yeah, that was a questionable rookie, right? Coming in, people were like, okay, he's going to be good, but how good is he really going to be? You know, and then people were like, okay, well, he's with San Antonio, so David Robinson is going to tutor him all the way through. But then during the course of the season, he was the leader of that team.
Yeah, but I remember...
From rookie year.
Mm-hmm. But I remember even back then, I remember David Robinson. And, you know, David Robinson was a stud, even though I think the year before he missed the whole season. But I remember immediately, and I thought it was weird. I'm like, because remember he basically gave the torch right away to Tim Duncan. And I'm like, why would he do that? That's weird, you know?
Yeah, and you knew he was on his way out. Like, the Admiral's on his way out. But he saw the greatness of Duncan that was in front of him. And mm-hmm. He relented. He just said, take the mantle.
Yeah.
He saw it before everybody else did.
He really did, because for me, I was a David Robinson guy. Like, I love David Robinson. So I was almost annoyed. Like, why is he doing this? And especially to a rookie. Like, I liked Tim Duncan too from Wake Forest, but that's weird.
Yeah.
But then halfway through the season, you're like, yeah, okay. All right. I can see it.
But again, that goes for the greatness of a David Robinson for doing that. And he mentored Tim in that way as well, because Tim has now done the same thing, where he's just passing on the team on to Kawhi and saying it's Kawhi's team now. And now he's retired, but you know, from the last 2 years, you've seen him just pass the torch along. And that just goes from great mentorship. That just goes for the personalities, the type of players, the quality individuals that San Antonio brings into their fold, right? That's why I love that organization, and you know, I love Tim Duncan. That's just his character, from being able to just walk away. Like, you take another kid from that, I shouldn't say kid, but you take another great player from that era in Kobe, who retired the same this year as well.
Right.
He went out holding on to that torch. You know, people were pulling and tugging at it, and he didn't want to let it go.
Yeah.
Right? Instead of mentoring the young kids, he was like, no, F this. I'm not going out easy. You know?
Yeah, I'm Kobe.
I'm going to shoot the last shot. I'm going to shoot the first shot. And so, I mean, again, Tim Duncan, again, he's going to be one of my top, what did I say the other day? I said he was like my top six player of all time.
Well, it's funny. I mean, I won't even touch too much on the whole Kobe thing, because just the whole part of him shooting the 50 shots in his last game, I mean, the funny thing is, I felt like I was like the Matrix. I felt like I was the only one who took the red pill. I couldn't understand why everybody was freaking out and going crazy that the fact that he got 50 points or 60 points on 50 shots in his last game, and everybody's celebrating. And I'm like, man, like this is a comedy reel. Like everybody's taking this serious. Like, yeah, are you guys kidding me?
Guys were playing defense. Guys, like, nonsense.
Yeah, it was a comedy show. And even I remember at the end when he threw the pass to, I think it was a Clarkson, to finish the game, and Clarkson got the dunk, and he had his arms out like, come, my children, taste my sweat. You know, like, it was so weird. I'm like, wow. Like, how is everybody just taking this in? Like, they're just being spoon-fed this, and they're just swallowing. Like, I couldn't understand it. But I'm going to get to the comparison with Kobe and Duncan in just a minute. But what I want to say about Tim Duncan's game, it wasn't glamorous. You know, everybody loves to say that he was boring.
It was glamorous, though, because he did it with so ease. Anybody who played the game, who studied and played the game at a decent level, I wouldn't say a high level, but anybody who was passionate about the game and trained and played hard, you had to appreciate the way he played. Just the skill sets he had, it was glamorous. He just made the game, the pivots, the defense, the bank shots, the up and unders, just the simplicity of the game. He just made it beautiful to watch. And that is a glamorous thing.
Like, to me, he may not have been as pretty as Hakeem on the floor. He wasn't as fluid as Mikhail, but he had a lot of the same footwork and moves as those guys did. I think in any craft, like, forget sports, just any craft. To me, you can truly become creative and devastating once you master the fundamentals, which is what he did, right? Like, that was his whole career. Like, he had the game mastered in terms of the fundamental skill set and the post and how to be a big man literally by the time he came to the league. Like, he had it figured out. By senior year at Wake Forest, he had it figured out.
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, that translated for so many years across the league. You know, even when like, he started sharing the mantle a little bit with Ginobili and with Parker as they started improving, you know, the world still revolved around him. I mean, even 2 years ago, two, 3 years ago, when they were playing the Heat, and he gave you those last big games still. And it was like, wow, like, this guy's been doing this for, like, 16 years, and still nobody can check him. And then to me, like, even though he never talked trash, you know, he wasn't the biggest talker. Could never get under his skin. He was so focused. He still wanted to rip your face off the same way. And to me, he was the only guy I've ever seen on the court that made Kobe cry. You remember that? During the when the Lakers three-peated, so I think it was the 2003 series, and that game six, and it's on YouTube. You can YouTube it if you like, but that game six, he destroyed Shaq, and by the end, he had Derek Fisher and Kobe crying on the bench. He just dismantled that dynasty by himself, basically. But never talk trash, you know, would never beat his chest. He just put it in your face, ran up the court, blocked your shot, gave it to a teammate. He just did everything the right way.
You know what? You look at his career and you wish kids, because people don't think it's glamorous, kids didn't pay attention to him enough.
Yeah.
You know, kids didn't pay attention to him, and they missed the fact that what you just alluded to, his skill sets were so high that's what the stuff they need to look at. They need to look at that guy like that and say, in order for me to reach that level, I'm going to have to train. I'm going to have to figure out the basics, the fundamentals, learn those stuff before I try to get to the other part. Because that's all he was about. It was just the basic fundamentals of the game.
Yeah.
He mastered it. And that can carry you through injuries. It can carry you through ageism, you know, as you get older and you get slower. You know, you can always fall back on your fundamentals.
Yeah,
you can always fall back on it because it doesn't leave you. It doesn't leave you. And kids nowadays, most kids nowadays, they want the flash. Fashion of Dash, right? So the Fashion of Dash, of course, is the high flying act and the 3-point shooting. But when that goes, when you can't get that shot up anymore, right, because somebody's in your face, you got to figure out a way to do things differently. You got to get the fundamentals. Here's a go to the rim and do something different than just be that one, not be that one trick pony. And that's something he wasn't. He was not a one trick pony. He played on both ends of the court. He can lock you up man to man. He was a great team defender as well.
Yeah, and I think with him too that the way the game is going right now, if you're a big man, you're looking to be the next Dirk, the next KD. Basically, you're just looking to just basically shoot outside. Like it's like guys are big but don't really want to be big, and the guys that are like that's basically sitting down in the post. They're so few and far in between. Like other than like DeMarcus Cousins and you know you could say Andre Drummond. It's bleak, man. Like I mean, you've seen some of the new guys coming up now, so you're hoping that's what kind of changes things again. But it's like you know you're a big man, you got to play a certain way. Yeah, you got to hit the outside shot too because you want to master everything, of course. But I think your foundation has to be making moves and creating stuff inside of the paint on the block.
Give me a Tim Duncan who can guarantee me at the end of the game. He's giving me 24. He's giving me 14. And he's giving me three blocks and threw in a couple of steals for good measure.
And about five assists.
Yeah. Give me a guy like that any single day because I guarantee you Dirk Nowitzki is not getting my big in foul trouble. You know what I mean? He may hit a couple of threes, but he's not getting anybody in damn trouble. Tim is putting the other big in foul trouble. He's putting the foreman in foul trouble. The wings that help and sink. Now he's kicking out to an open three. Master the fundamentals, man, and especially for a big, you know, master those that in the paint game, and it changes the whole game. It changes the whole game on offense. It changes defensively because now you got their big out on the bench. Now you can totally dominate on the offensive end even more so. Give me a big in the paint who can score 24 as opposed to a big who can score 24 from the wing.
So I'm just going to do a quick comparison here just because, you know, everybody likes to say that Kobe Bryant is, you know, the best player of this generation. And you can make the case for him and you can definitely make the case for Duncan being the best. You know, everybody has their preference. To me, and everybody's doing the whole thing, who would you rather have between Duncan and Kobe? But I want to go at it a different way. If you take two of their basketball careers, and you made them a woman. You made them a wifey comparison, basically, what I like to do. So if you made them a woman.
You're really going a different way here.
I really am. I really am. So, for example, here's option one. Now, option one is hot, sexy, can cook, great in bed, always dresses fly, a little too fly sometimes, loves posting selfies and the odd twerking videos on Instagram, much to your dismay. She likes the attention other dudes throw at her, even though she's super loyal to you. You argue like cats and dogs, and she's definitely not afraid to air out your business to everybody. She's a great mother to the five kids you had together, but she really doesn't get along well with your boys or your family. She doesn't have a lot of friends either. Basically, she's a good woman with some crazy chick tendencies that make you contemplate if marrying her was the way to go, almost on a regular basis. But then you remember the five kids she gave you and the good times you had, and you're willing to continue on, even though she's probably taking years off of your life. So that's option one. Here's option two. She's really pretty.
I'll take number two.
She's really pretty, but she likes to be more unassuming. She can also cook and clean. She may not perform tricks in bed like option number one, but she definitely keeps you interested. She stays off all social media. Likes wearing sweats and plain clothes around the house. Some people think she's super boring, but the people in her circle know she can be fun and hilarious at times. Doesn't like confrontation, hates arguing, and she'll never roll your business out to everybody, much less to her girls. She's a great mother to your five kids. She also gets along great with your boys, and your family loves her. She's a good woman who's stable, doesn't want any attention, and even though you may spend way more time watching soap operas with her than walking any type of red carpet at special galas and events, you'll never want to leave her side. Now, You may think every guy will gravitate towards option two, but you'd be surprised how much guys secretly crave option one, even if it comes to ulcers and an upgraded spike in their stress levels. So to me, I like
car crashes, so I'll pick option one.
You like train wrecks, okay.
I like car crashes, man. You know, you're driving on the highway, you see that spectacular car crash, fire burning, and you stop and you look, like, that's me, like, car crashes.
Yeah, I can relate to that. I can relate to that.
No, but, okay, looking at your woman tendencies regards to Colby and Duncan, for me, I'm taking, of course, option number two, because number one, she gets along with my fam. Mm-hmm. And that's all that matters. So I'll go with number two. Yeah. In a sweat, baggy sweat, or was it like Lululemon sweat?
No, it's baggy sweats. Baggy sweats, see? Yeah, right? So to me, I look at it kind of that way. It's like it depends on what you're looking for. Do you want the hot mama that's, you know, you're going to argue all the time, but you know she does great things, but my God, does she cause you stress? Or do you want the other one that's a little more unassuming, but you know what you're getting every day of your life? You know, so it depends. Both of them work. You know, you still got five kids, which, you know, in equation to basketball, of course, represent rings. But you're still getting the same quality of, you know, the same amount of kids, basically. But what's coming with it? So it's what you can handle. So for me, I'm definitely taking option two. You know, I can work with option two. I don't want the stress with option one. To compare back to basketball, I think that's what Tim Duncan, you know, represented. People may have thought he was boring and not flashy, but people in the circle thought he was a hilarious guy. People thought, you know, behind the scenes, he was a great person, great teammate, always classy, you know, always treated people great, never had controversies. To me, these things are important, you know.
I won't go as deep as you in regards to comparing him to wifey's. I'm just going to keep it simple and say, as a teammate, who would I want to play with? Mm-hmm. And that would be Timmy. You know, as a coach, who would I want to coach? And again, that would be Timmy. And I'll just stop it there.
Well, I'll just add to this. Like, I think Kobe was the closest thing that we've seen to Michael Jordan. But I think for this generation, of course, he didn't win as much as this guy did. But I think Tim Duncan is the closest we've seen to Bill Russell.
Yeah.
To me, that's like, I think you have to kind of compare his career to that. Because, of course, there's 30 teams in the league. You're not going to win 11 titles in 13. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, it will never happen. But the way he's won consistently for 19 years, that stands for something to me.
Yeah, you know? No doubt.
And just like Bill Russell, he wasn't afraid to pass the mantle and say, you know what? Yeah, Ginobili is the guy right now. I could take a step back right now. You know, just like Bill Russell did. Same thing with Tony Parker, same thing with Kawhi Leonard. You know, Bill Russell wasn't afraid to give the team to Havlicek to Sam Jones.
I'll also argue, too, it didn't, like, as great as the organization as San Antonio is, they were fortunate to get Timmy. If the Knicks had gotten them or somebody else, the Nets, he would have bought championships in those cities as well. I think he'd have won championships regardless
where he played.
He was just that type of player.
Yeah, you know? I agree with that. I think it's very few examples in sports where the situation is perfect in all phases, you know, just in terms of player, organization, city. You know, I'm personally not 100% sure if it would have worked out that way anywhere else, personally. You know, like, you have like a Magic in L.A., Bird in Boston, Joe Montana in San Francisco, Tom Brady in New England. Like, those are few and far between, so we get that kind of longevity where everything matches, the personality, the organization, everything matches together. You know, it's very, very rare that you see that in sports. So the last question I'll ask, though, is will we ever see another Tim Duncan again?
Yeah, I'm sure you will. It's, like, everything is... Everything goes in a circle. Like, again, he's another... You compared him to Bill Russell, right? It was a long time in between, but he still came around.
Right.
So I think there's going to be another Michael. There's going to be another Magic. There's going to be... those type of players, they're far and few between, but, you know, they're once in a generation, generational, but it's going to come around again. It's going to come around again.
It's funny. I think that right now, I think the person you can look at is your boy. I know you love him, Carl Anthony Towns. I think he can possibly be the next Tim Duncan. But maybe not in terms of personality, but what he does on both ends of the floor. I love to say Anthony Davis, but he's not durable right now, unfortunately. Yeah. You know, but I think Carl Anthony Towns, if you can project this career out, I think he could be the next Tim Duncan. Anyways, love you, brother. Thank you, big brother Kurt. You can get off my stoop now.
All right, well, thanks for being on your stoop. It's been a pleasure. Timmy, gonna miss him. And before I let go of this microphone or this phone or whatever you want to call this thing, I got to give props to Tim for being of West Indian descent and going as far as he did from picking up the game at a late age and being a Hall of Famer. He'll be like a first ballot Hall of Famer from the West Indies. It's storybook ending for a classy dude. He went out just as he came in. Tip of the hat, cordial, full of character. He just went out like Tim.
Did it his way, even though it was quiet and unassuming, but it was still his way.
Yep.
Okay, well, you're still on my stoop, man. Get off, man. Get off.
Peace.
All right, peace. All right, so we went a few minutes over today. Sue us. As usual, thank you for listening to The Stoop today on South Shore Ave Radio. This is our mini podcast series. For more podcasts and blog write-ups, make sure you subscribe to SouthShoreAve.com. Once again, that's SouthShoreAve.com. Big Brother Curtis, this is Cal C, and this is the mini podcast series, The Stoop, on South Drive Radio. Until the next pod, folks, peace.